Welcome, everybody, to our, I think, second to last practice building call. I've been getting some emails from some of you across the month letting me know some of your successes and wins, which is always great to hear about. Tonight's theme is going to be storytelling. We're going to be talking about that in some detail as we get going. But I want to first
Doris,
you're here.
Yeah, I've got this clicking sound. Do you hear that? I think I'm going to try my other phone.
Okay, good.
Okay, this is very, difficult, this phone. Okay, I'm going to hang this up.
It's all fine.
Doris, it's fine.
Oh, it's fine? You don't hear the clicking? Oh, okay.
Okay, let's
go. I'm hearing the clicking. It's terrible. I'm hearing
then
it.
Then hang up and call back.
I'll call back. I'm going to use the other phone.
There's a story for you.
There's 30 or 40 of us on the call. Let's be graceful. Okay. So I want to first hear how many folks have met my big fat challenge, which was to grow your practice by having 3 new paying clients. I've not gotten very many emails from folks about that, so I'm hoping people forgot about that step but still met the challenge. So is there anybody in this call that has met the challenge and is going to let us know about it?
Yes, Erica, I had a few new people.
Okay, good. Who else? Wow, well, we obviously have to do more work because we haven't got enough people who have made the challenge. Okay, let's move on to the next aspect of what we're up to, which is to first hear any wins anybody has had in this last month that they want to share that has worked for them in terms of building their practice.
Hi, Doris Warshay is here.
We know you're here, Doris. Do you have something to share?
Well, I had an interesting experience today. Last week I took a 4-day intensive cranial sacral course, and I called a client that I haven't seen for a few months, and I phoned her up to ask her if she would be interested in being a practice client for me for cranial sacral. And, of course, she would love to because we knew that this is kind of work that really would relate to her. And she called me back about 2 minutes later, and I offered to do this for free. And she called me back about 2 minutes later, and she says, you know, can we also have a Rubenfeld session after we do the cranial sacral? And so it kind of hit me today, the aspect of getting in touch with clients that haven't been around for a little while and bringing them back. And this kind of was kind of a serendipity for me.
That's great. Very nice. Good job. And I'm sure it caught you by surprise when she said, by the way, can we do a Rubenfeld session as well?
Yeah.
It's almost like we are so focused on this next thing we're talking about that we forget that what we have to provide is really valuable and people would want that too.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Who else has something to share?
This is Erica. I had a nice surprise. I did a video teleseminar for a site called goodtherapy.org, and I gave a whole PowerPoint presentation, and only one person came on to ask a question at the end. And it turned out to be Laurie Schwartz, someone who had been in Ilana Rubenfeld's second training. So I'm reconnecting with her. We're both going to the U.S. Association for Body Psychotherapy, and we'll meet there. But that was really nice to have her respond to what I was saying with that background and that way of thinking and talking from the Rubenfeld training.
That's great. Nice job. Doris, what's your win?
About 2 years ago, I put my name into a directory here. I live in Port Washington, Long Island, and it's called Try Port First, and I had totally forgotten about it. It's distributed for free around the town, and they have my name listed under therapy, under the T, and also under Port Washington Body, Mind, Spirit Center. I had called myself a center at that time. But what I didn't like about it is that it was just, you know, that one line, and it didn't say anything else, you know, about what really services I'm doing. So when they sent me a letter recently asking, you know, me to say it's okay to go ahead and put me in for the next 2 years, I said I'd like to change it. They said that's going to cost you money. And when I found out it was like for two extra lines, $65 for 2 years, I said, I'm going to pay that. So I did that, and they let me know that it came. And I have Rubenfeld's, you know, Synergy Method listed, Gentle Body Work, you know, hypnotherapy, Reiki healing, and mental health counselor. So so I felt good about that, that I enlarged it. Because I don't think that was, you know, too attractive, just that one line, you know, body, mind, spirit center.
Well, and they didn't necessarily know how to think about you.
Pardon me?
They didn't know how to think about you.
Yeah, exactly.
That means a lot of different things, a lot of people.
Now I was more specific. So I'm looking forward to seeing that the booklet will be coming about, you know, out shortly. So that was something that I did, yeah. Yeah, I have a question that my daughter brought up, and I'm curious to know your reaction to it and anyone else's reaction. My daughter said I should create a second brochure that doesn't have Rubenfeld Synergy on it because she said there are some places like a chiropractor's office that might find body work or a massage place, you know, competitive. She said, why don't you, like, make up a brochure that just says that I do the Reiki, healing, a mental health counselor, and a hypnotherapy. And so at certain places, I should put those brochures. What do you think of that idea? She said, you know, it's competitive in some places, the idea of body work.
Well, that's her theory, and it may be true, but unless you've had places where you've gone to leave your flyers, say, I don't want to put that there because I think you're competitive, I don't know if that really helps. And
by leaving off RSM,
it's certainly not helping the purpose of this call, which is to help you become a more successful RSM practitioner. So I'm not a fan of that strategy unless there's a place where that's an issue.
This is Judy.
Yeah, go ahead, Judy. Go ahead, Judy.
Massage people and chiropractor people seem to like my brochure or my flyer because it does not just do body stuff. And so sometimes, you know, the chiropractors that I know and massage therapists are glad to have some place to refer people that may get emotional on the table and they don't know exactly what to do with it.
Yep, very good.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you got a point there. So I think I'm going to tell my daughter to scrap that idea.
Also, to reinforce that point, my partner, who's not able to be on the call tonight, had an experience of a client that's going to a chiropractor and to her, and the chiropractors have been very impressed with the reports of what the client's getting from the Rubenfeld Synergist, and the two of them are going to meet to talk about the work together and perhaps refer people back and forth. So
that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so that's another example.
This is Bev. I had a similar reaction from an acupuncturist who one of my clients was working for, and he was amazed at the results of certain work that I did with this particular client. So I know that he will be a referral source. As a matter of fact, just before I left home, I'm in Florida now, I received a referral for an 80-year-old woman. And as soon as I get back, I plan on picking up and working with her. She has anxiety in the morning. Another interesting thing that happened to me was that I was in a local cafe and where I had left cards and had gone back there and found that the stack that I had left was gone. So I replaced them. So it was an option. You know, I would have never thought of putting it in that particular kind of a location.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to have attracted some attention.
Right.
And, you know, maybe one out of 50 will call you, but one out of 50 person who becomes a regular client and sees you a couple times a month is something on the order of $2,400 a year, and a box of business cards is $20.
Yeah, well, this box was from Overnight Print, and it was $7.42.
Okay, so you make my point.
It was worth my $7.42.
You make my point even bigger. Who else has a win? Who else? Come on.
Is it Teresa? Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Teresa.
Yeah. Okay, I joined a network here in Tampa, Florida, because I realized that all what we have in terms of the internet and the web page and all that is for the big cities where the larger concentration of rumorful synergies are. But I'm here in Tampa, Florida, and there's not one soul here, and I imagine if they place an ad in a billboard, it's not going to get down here. And so I moved and I went and joined this network, and the net it was a group that was a healing alliance that existed for a decade in Tampa, and it was a non-profit, and then a network, which is a profit, a for-profit, and they are trying to join forces. And these two groups have doctors, lots of doctors and body workers, et cetera, et cetera. And I am the only woman for synergies. Now, my only problem is that I don't know how to present myself. And these are public speakers people. And it's the month of breast cancer, October. And they are going to be doing fairs, and the network has they can have access to conference rooms, and they are going to pay for all this. And I am like, oh, my God, what can I do? You know, because I am not a public speaker. And so I've been thinking, what can I do aside from present myself to the space and distribute the flyers and distribute my cards, because that I'm going to be able to do. But I was wondering, maybe I can pass the ad of Ruben Fell. Maybe I can read something of Ruben Fell. But anyways, that's what I've been doing lately. And they meet every Monday, and I've been meeting every Monday at 9 p.m. And it's building up to, I mean, it's looking really good, because they are giving me a schedule of activities that they're going to be doing through the month, and they already have October, November, December, and activities where I can go and bring my cards and bring my brochures and everything. So I'm excited.
That's great. Very good. Who else doesn't win?
Excuse me, Teresa, it's Beverly. Could you bring your table and do a demonstration, like a 10-minute, 15-minute demo?
I don't know if I feel that comfortable in public.
Okay.
The only reason I ask
is because Nan and I used to do what you described, and one of us would talk and the other one would be giving short sessions as an example. You know,
you were two people. I were with someone else, but alone I can only like bring something that is already written that talks about Ruben Fell, and probably read that and probably show the minute ad maybe in a presentation. I think that's as far as I can go in terms of, because I am not a public speaker.
One more thing. What about the video, the DVDs that were given in the press packet? Could you show those?
Yes, that I can do.
That would be very good. So it shows action. It shows something with Ruben Fell synergy.
Thank you.
Let's
for reminding
moving.
Me.
Any other wins from the last month since we've been together? Okay, good.
I can just mention about the doctor's offices. I have been doing a lot with the primary care physician. I put brochures just today. I asked for permission, and they said it was fine. And I went to a lab for blood workup, and I asked if I can put them down in the cards there. And I've been doing that kind of thing, gastroenterologist today and a radiologist. I did a lot today somehow.
Good for you.
So I put my brochures, including a restaurant. I took out manicotti, and I gave it to the person who kind of overweight there who handed me the food. And she said she's going to send her mother to me. And we'll see.
Excellent. Okay, very good. Let's move on now to the next aspect of our call and just a quick review of the homework. One of the things that I asked you to do was to look and see what barriers or blocks get in the way of your practice. What's in the way of you being available when a practice building moment arrives so that you can step in and take care of it? And are you in a position to really demonstrate the RSM principles at any given moment whenever that shows up? And so I asked you to look all the way through your practice and to share that with your partner. Does anybody have anything that they discovered or learned during that homework that they think would be useful for us all to hear about?
I have a my full-time job which subsidizes my practice, and I realize that I have to make more time for building my RSM practice and not use the other as an excuse not to do so.
Very good. Did you see any specific behaviors or things that you need to change in order to make that a reality?
I have different action plans, but I don't have a specific answer to your question.
But you have new action plans based on this insight.
Yeah, I run a group for men, and I'm opening a second group for men, and I've been carrying envelopes with invitations with me, but looking for opportunities to give them to men who might be prospects.
Perfect. So that embodied one of the things we talked about was being ready to practice build at any given moment. So by having those with you all the time, when you see opportunities, you can actually take advantage of them as opposed to, well, I'm not sure it's the right moment, or I don't know the right things, or I don't know what to do. So that's a perfect example of what I asked you to do in the homework. That's terrific. Who else has something in that category?
I'm in and out of the hospital this week for the last 2 weeks, and I've been having many conversations with nurses, nurse practitioners, and I brought my brochure and cards with me, even though I'm not from the area locally, and we've had some really interesting conversations. And it just helped me to stay fresh while I'm away and helped me to, you know, continue to talk about what I'm doing.
Excellent. Very nice.
And get validated, you know, through other practitioners.
Even better. Who else?
This is Deborah. I work at Omega Institute during the summer doing Rubenfeld Synergy. And like Teresa, I have a discomfort with sort of giving public presentations. And I did have to give a presentation at the beginning of the year. And so there were staff people that came to me as a result of that. But one of my blocks is that I'm shy about giving public presentations. But I realized that if I can push myself next year at the beginning of the Omega season, because it starts sort of in late spring, to possibly do a presentation for those people who are coming to Omega for R&R, which is, you know, usually they give staff presentations or staff workshops, and I would probably have an opportunity to do that. I would have to really give myself a push to get more public about what I do there, because I think it would really increase the number of sessions that I do.
I would imagine big time. And so it sounds like it's the kind of thing where once a week you'd be giving the same kind of talk.
Well, I mean, I could give a talk even to the participants if I got there on Sunday night, you know, to everybody who came for the week. I just have been, I'm very shy about doing it, so I've held back. So it's really something for me to look at. When I heard Teresa speak, I just thought, you know, it's just, I think once you get up there, it will come, because we do really have this connection with the work. And we, you know, I think you don't have to be a public speaker to begin to present this work.
No, and one of the things to do is, there's a number of tricks and techniques to get better at doing a speech, but if you're going to do something week in, week out, or early in the season, you can write a short presentation and do it in the way that you're most comfortable with and rehearse it and rehearse it and rehearse it so that you have less things to have your attention on when you're doing it. And if the first couple times you're a little nervous or whatever else, that's fine. What some people also find works better for them is, instead of getting up and standing behind a lectern and giving a speech, which is to instead do a demonstration, which may work better in the Omega situation, where you can actually do a demonstration where you're just talking through what you're doing, which is a much more natural expression for you than getting up and giving a speech or a presentation.
And I think there are ways of giving demonstrations without actually putting somebody on a table. You can actually
lead
people through an exercise or have them contact something in their own experience and then ask what
happened. Sorry.
Yep.
There are a lot of ways.
Ilana's book is loaded with them.
Yeah, that was the other thing I was going to say to Teresa. It's very profound for people because it really does touch people in a place where they haven't kind of looked before.
Right.
And
this is Judy.
It really impresses people.
Right. This is Judy.
Hold on, Judy, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm agreeing that the stuff from the book is so important. We do something called Rubenfeld Synergy for Life, and I've done a lot of presentations about Rubenfeld Synergy. The more I find that the more people can do things themselves and experiment themselves, the more they're engaged, and then the words come about some of the principles, but really they're having a little mini workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even have to have somebody come up and do a demonstration because they're all doing it with themselves.
Yep. Excellent point.
Deborah, I could probably help you even just over the phone. Years ago when I graduated from the Gestalt Center of Long Island, I had to do a colloquium. And guess what I did it on? Performance anxiety. And so I have this whole booklet that I wrote and, you know, little pointers and help. So in a couple of weeks, maybe, I'll be free enough if you give me a call and
I can have
a discussion on the phone with you.
Yeah, thank you. When I do it, I'm fine. I just have to
get myself to do it. You're nervous about it. You just have to go do it.
I'm actually not nervous once I'm up there. So.
Oh, well, that's good to hear.
I will love the book or whatever you have written on performing anxiety.
I do
other things in life. I do ceremonies. I just officiated in a wedding, and it's very hard for me.
Okay,
right.
We got to stay on task here, folks. So if you want Doris's assistants, get in touch with her after the class.
So it's Doris Warsay, no?
Yep.
Okay.
Someone else was about to say something about another thing that they saw about themselves that was a block or a barrier to them to being a more effective practice builder. Who else has something to share?
Well, this is Joan speaking, and one of the things that was a deterrent for me was I rent space from a chiropractor, and he's not the one as far as a lot of other people where they want to have a nice attractive entrance in an office or whatever. That's not his forte. And he had this faded red sign that said no solicitors on the front, and also the windows were quite dirty. And I thought, I don't want to invite my new clients into an office that looks like has this presentation at the front. So I asked if we could take the sign down, and I had the windows washed, and even just that little thing made me feel a lot better as far as inviting new clients or new people in to come.
Nice.
To the office.
Very good. Very good. Who else?
Well, this is something that I talked about on the last phone call, and that's, you know, recognizing that I really like to stay at home. I'm very comfortable. There's nothing scary at home. So I have been I joined a garden club. I spent a whole day at one of their district meetings and talked to several people about Rubenfeld Synergy. I gave my first icebreaker speech at Toastmasters. And, of course, what I talked about was how I went from being an air traffic controller to a Rubenfeld Synergist, and I got a really great reception. A couple of people want to put me in touch with someone close to where I live, and even someone commented that they'd really like to hear me speak more on the healing work that I do. So, again, you know, getting out, putting myself in situations where I'm going to meet people and talk to them, and although I don't always feel like I know what to say, you know, I can talk. So I do.
Yeah, and Joan, one of the things that you did here, and this will sound silly, but most people haven't met that many female air traffic controllers, particularly who went from that profession to the profession you're in now. So all you got to do is tell that story over and over again, and you'll have people listening very eagerly.
Yes.
And that's a great icebreaker. What did you say, Joan?
I said, yes, they hung on every word.
Exactly. So use it. And just remember, you're going to get bored with the story way quicker than all the people you're going to be meeting do. So just get used to being bored about hearing you say the same thing. But you're all, each one of you, and this is a great example, are going to discover a story, and this is really the theme we're going to get into in a little while, about yourself or the practice or what you do that gets people engaged in a conversation. And Joan, this could be your strategy for 98% of your practice building.
I'm just getting that, David. Thank you. I hadn't thought about it in that way.
And that is going to be something that's easy for you to do because it's a story you can tell. And it's one that has great color and imagination to it, and it gets people listening closely. So that's a great example of where we're going to get to. So very good. Thank you for that. Anybody else have anything to share from that step of the homework? Okay, good. Well, then let's move on to the next piece. The other thing I wanted you to do was to notice what views you had about your own practice building aspect of your work, to make sure you were clear about your own attitudes and stories, to talk about them with your partner, and to see how you can change your story about practice building in order to empower yourself and your practice. And the gentleman who spoke at the earlier part of the first section of the homework, that was a great demonstration of this as well, because his story was, I'm too busy with my regular job that supports everything to really practice build. And so we shifted that. Any other stories that illustrate this homework?
The homework was basically, how do you get out of your own way? Is that what I understand?
Well, that was the first part. The second one was more, what are your own attitudes and stories, and how can you change that story? So if your story is, Deborah's story was, I'm not a good public speaker. Well, the truth is, no,
okay.
I'm a fine public speaker. I'm just nervous, and I just have to get over myself and just
keep
going.
That's what I'm saying here to you.
Yeah. Anybody else have an example?
Yes, here's one way. I can meet people, talk about Rubenfeld Synergy, hand out a flyer if I'm getting ready to do a workshop or a card, and take a conversation and bring it into body-mind stuff if it's relevant or if I can stretch it to be relevant. Well, that's fine. What I cannot do is do something anonymously or impersonally, advertising to people I don't see or sense. And putting up posters in town, everything from putting up posters in town to doing website and email and all that kind of marketing, I'm completely shy away from.
Okay. So one of the ways that you can deal with that particular situation, and it's a great example of what we're talking about, is you're a one-to-one communicator. You're not a mass communicator.
Right.
But here's what you might be able to do. You might be able to tell a story about yourself or someone you know. So you could write an article about a client, keeping it anonymous, of course. You could write an article about your own journey. If you have a similar kind of story like Joan does, where you used to be a construction worker, steel welder, and now you do this or whatever it is. Any of those sort of dramatic changes intrigue people and have them want to get to know you more. So in those places where you need to be more public and it's not a one-on-one situation, having a story that you can share is a way of being intimate, but from a different perspective. So that's one thing to consider. The other thing is, again, if you have a chance or the opportunity, where if you can do a demo, that will have people have an experience of you doing one-on-one work. So that's another place to think about a strategy that might work for you.
Thanks.
Sure.
That'd be good. Yep.
Who else has an example of this that we're talking about?
Well, I spoke earlier. I realized that I need to visualize being well received. That when I start having self-doubt or squirminess, then I hold myself back.
Mm.
So I just see myself succeeding and having people like my flyers or like my invitations, which they're doing. And just I haven't gotten much results yet, but I'm taking the actions at least.
Right, and you're changing your own story about yourself, and you haven't necessarily seen all the results show up, but you are completely expecting they will show up. You just haven't gotten there yet. Very good. Who else?
I have a challenge making cold calls. And I'll give you an example. I made up a packet of information and took it to a chiropractor and told him in the covering letter that I would call him in a week once he got a chance to look at the short DVD and read the material. And when I got back to him a week later, he informed me, he said he doesn't refer to people like me, that he refers to people that have their PhDs in psychology or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of deflated me. And that's kind of a competitive thing that I build up within me, is the fact of people that have degrees in psychology and whatever, compared to me being a certified Rubenfeld synergist and getting acceptance by professional people like chiropractors.
Yeah. You know what? Not everybody thinks I'm good at what I do either.
Yeah.
Some people find me really annoying. Some people wonder why I don't have an MBA.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, exactly. So, but here, you face a common problem, and if you're going to use a strategy like you did, and kudos for sending stuff out and following up and getting the person on the phone, that takes a different kind of strategy to do that. But you need to play a mental game with yourself when you're doing that kind of thing. If you're going to do that kind of strategy, you have to play the game called, it's going to take me 10 of these conversations, 9 of which won't go very well, in order for the 10th one to be birthed. And there's lots of ratios like this. Like, one of the ones that's really interesting is they did a study and they found that when someone was required to follow up on something, most people stopped after 2 attempts. So if somebody, you know, you met somebody at a networking event and they said, call me, I'm really interested in talking further about it, and you email them and they never respond, and then you call them and they never respond, most people say, well, obviously the person was just kidding and wasn't really serious about that and I'm wasting my time. What they discovered is that if people made the 3rd or 4th attempt, the rate of success went up dramatically, because inevitably the email didn't go through, or the person's voicemail got lost, or it happened to come in when they were on vacation, or there's all kinds of perfectly reasonable explanations that show up later on that people don't imagine. They only imagine the worst. The person doesn't like me, doesn't want to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And most people seeking jobs, doing sales, doing whatever, stop after 2. So a simple thing is to stop after 4. So that's one thing. But if you're going to do this kind of sending mailings and follow up, you got to know that 9 out of 10 people are going to think you're an idiot, don't have any desire for what you want to do, and you almost have to approach those situations not expecting to fail, but when it happens, happily check the box off and say, okay, I'm now 30% of the way towards having somebody who does want to refer to me. And it's a weird mental game you have to play with yourself. But if you allow yourself to get hooked by somebody else's superiority complex about what kind of degree you have, You'll never win that battle. Everybody's got their own silly opinion of what degree is matters and not. You talk to college professors, I know more about coaching than most college professors, but if I wanted to go get a job teaching at a college or a university, they'd have nothing to do with me because I don't have a master's degree, much less a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
That's just their own way of measuring things, and if you allow other people's way of measuring things to be your way, it's not going to be very fun. So the trick is check off the box. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I just thought of something that I have not done, and I don't feel the confidence to do, and yet I think it might be a good idea, and that is to call up some past clients, you know, even people from 3-4 years ago, you know, could be 2-4 years ago, and, you know, if they don't want to come see me again, you know, then I said to myself, boy, I'll feel really lost. How do I, you know, say, like, can you recommend me to somebody else if you don't want to come to me? I don't know how to word it in such a way. Or do I offer them a free session? I mean, I feel a little peculiar about it.
Well, first off, you want to be calling people that have been clients of yours to be in service, not to sell what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's much easier for you all to be in service rather than to be in sales. So that's step one. So what I do is I've got people that I've been coaching for many, many years, and from time to time I will call them because I'm curious what's going on in their lives.
Uh-huh.
What's happened since then? And it's fun to get engaged and check in to see what's going on. And I expect that most of them aren't going to be, oh, thank God you called. I need to come see you right away. I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think they're going to say, thank God you called. I've got five people and I couldn't remember your phone number. I've got to refer you to them.
Nice.
But by being in touch with them and having a conversation about what's happening, and not 10 seconds, but a couple, you know, 5-10 minutes, we may discover something they were working on, and they may get tapped into, wow, it was really great when we were working on that, and I got so far down the road, but, you know, this other 10% has come up again. Maybe I should come see you, or I'm really glad to check in with you, or they may see someone 2 weeks later. So those calls have to be from a service point of view, not from a, oh, good, I can hustle you for more business point of view. And if you do that, you can make really nice progress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we got to move on because we've got to get to the meat of our call today. And one of the other things I asked you to prepare for this call was to share a one-minute story about an RSM session that you did with a client. So I want to hear two of them. Then we're going to talk more about storytelling, and we may hear a couple more. So who would like to share their one-minute story?
I do.
Okay. And you are?
I am Heather.
Heather, please go ahead.
Hey, Heather.
Thank you. Hi. I have a client who is in her 70s, and there was one session probably somewhere around her 8th to 10th session with me, and she's now been a client, I would say, for, we've had about 40 sessions. And she got in touch with a place and time, which we recognize as being very young, probably about 4 years old, when she was in objection to what was going on, and she rebelled, and she was getting slapped for it. And she described the scene of her mother and grandmother hitting her. And as she did that, you know, I told her to, you know, to move, to keep moving her hands, move her hands. And in a very short time, she started to have a tantrum, and I just let her go. I let her scream. I just encouraged her to get it all out. And afterwards, she said, oh, my God, I've been holding that in for 70 years. That was a 70-year-long tantrum that she had to get out of her system.
That's great. And what happened for her after that?
She sort of floated out of here that time, but she just was totally amazed by the potential and the power of this work.
Very nice. So let me just talk a little bit about the story you told, because what we're focusing on today is how to tell powerful stories to have people really understand what RSM is all about. And you did a beautiful job, and I appreciate you jumping in and being the first one, because it gave me great stuff to work with. First off, your opening to the story, whenever you say, I have a 70-year-old client, it almost always gets people's interest, because anyone that's older than 60 sounds intriguing, and you know there's not going to be, yeah, and they got up and they had breakfast and they went to sleep. You know there's going to be some drama to it. Immediately was interested. The other thing is, if you'll notice, most movies, books, stories, whatever, have an arc to them. They start out, you get to know the characters at some level, something happens, it's usually dramatic, it gets resolved, everybody lives happily ever after. And what you did in your story, Heather, was everything except the happily ever after. So that's why I asked you what happened after the session, and that's when you said she floated out of here and whatever else. So just make sure that your story ends up with the happily ever after part, because that's the payoff for going through the angst of the drama. You know, and I could imagine in my head as you were saying this, the 70-year-old woman having a temper tantrum all over your table. So it grabbed me emotionally and viscerally. So nice job.
Thank you.
Who else?
This is Deborah. I have a story from Omega.
Okay.
At Omega, I often see people once because they're there for the week. And they're trying different services. So I sometimes have people come to me and they say, I've never done this before. I don't know what it is. I'm curious. And I had a woman who had had an illness that she developed when she was a child. And when she walked into the room with me, she looked kind of collapsed in her chest. And she looked like she was having a little trouble getting her breath and kind of caved in. And I, you know, don't have time to do a big intake, but I did work with her for the session. And during the session, her shoulders were lifted off the table. She wasn't that comfortable. And we worked with a lot of imagery. And her imagery was really about opening up doors and windows in her body that had needed air. And Rubenfeld Synergy is really wonderful for deepening people's healing metaphors and images. And as she did that, I could feel her body begin to soften and to let go of years of not being able to get a breath because her lungs had limited capacity. And when she finally sat up at the end of the session, I was amazed, and she was amazed, because she was sitting up straight, what felt like straight for her for the first time in her life. And she could breathe much more easily. And it was a very moving session, because I certainly didn't expect that to happen. But she really did some deep work in within the time that we had together, and it made a very big difference, at least for the time that she was with me. And when she walked out, she had a whole new posture.
That's great. So a couple of things about that story. I think you could edit it just a tad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you want to make the part about her whole chest opening up and being able to breathe better and how you got there. And I think you want to include in there another fact, which is how long the session was. And so, because it highlights how quickly a talented synergist working with someone doing minimal intake, just using the power of touch and the power of talk in the way that they've been trained, can make a world-class difference for someone. This person never met you. If you had said, by the time we come out of this session, you're going to be breathing way easier than you have in your entire life, they would have said, you're on crack cocaine, I don't believe you, have a nice day.
I wouldn't have believed it either.
Right. But this is the power of RSM, that in an instant or a half an hour or whatever it is, with two people that never met each other before, world-class changes can be made. And these are the kind of stories you want to be telling to people, because it's exciting for people. Because they all have their own version of something they've been carrying or stuck with or putting up with for a long time. That if they can see that you may have the access to getting freedom there, they get very interested. And this is why stories are so powerful, because you're not talking about what RSM is. You know, when you start explaining the mechanics of RSM, it's boring. You know, and if you said to me, what you're going to do is you're going to lay on a table, and I'm going to talk to you and ask you a lot of questions, that sounds like having root canal to me. If I'm going to lay on a table, I want to have a massage and go to sleep. If I have to talk about stuff from my childhood or what's gone on or how I'm feeling or what this thing does, I'm not interested. Now, if you tell me that by doing that, I'll be able to bicycle six times faster because my lungs will work more differently, I get very interested. So this is where you can talk in the third person about something that gets very powerful. Many of you have seen people speak or give a presentation. And one of the interesting things about someone giving a presentation is that if they're in front of the room, they are already denoted with some level of authority. People think this person knows something, they're important, they have something to say, we should pay attention. And a gifted speaker will craft stories into their presentation about the kind of work they do with people, and it'll come off to people as, holy cow, this guy is an expert in this stuff. I want to have him do more of it with me. And he hasn't said, you must come hire me, I'm great. He has simply told the story about his craft and the difference it made for somebody else, and it allows people to get a mental picture in their brain of what it might be like for them or their sister who has that same issue, whatever else. So this is why stories are so potent. And by the way, telling a story is so much easier than explaining what Rubenfeld is. Many of you could build an entire practice without ever explaining what Rubenfeld is to somebody if you were a gifted storyteller. Because if you keep telling stories that are inspirational, and by the way, they can be Deborah's story if you want to. They can be Beverly's story. They can be John's story. They don't have to be your story, but you can make them your own. The key is that people get an image in their head of what Rubenfeld can do for them in a way that's not you explaining, in a way that draws them in, gets them emotionally going and excited and thinking and engaged. And when you do that, it is so much easier. So this is where to tell stories makes a huge, huge difference. Who else has a story?
I have a story.
Okay, go ahead, Doris.
I have currently a gentleman in my practice who is telling me about a relationship that he has with a woman currently that has changed from the sexual relationship to her becoming more distant and willing to sleep with him in the bed but doesn't want him to touch her. And he's been trying in his worst way to find out what's going on. And she just said, I just need to slow down. I'm not ready to get into such a deep relationship. And he said, but we were enjoying sex. I don't understand it. And she said, I just can't really get into it. And he's just at a loss. And he came here for the session and kept saying, I'm just like, you know, I'm so afraid to, like, really push her on it. I've always been my whole life so aware of being sweet to people and nice to people. And he said, I'm not being good to myself anymore. And I really need to stand up for myself. And I said, how would you do it? And then I had him talk, you know, to her, put her on the couch here and talk, and, you know, how he really wanted to talk from his heart and soul to her. And he did. And then afterwards he said, oh, my God, thank you so much, because now I really think I have the guts and the power to speak to her and say, come on, let's get to the bottom of this. What the hell is going on here? And so
very
he
good.
Left in a very elated mood, because he said, now he says, I'm going to take care of myself first. And I never did that in my life. Always took care of everybody else.
Very good. And now is there a follow-up to the story, what happened after he went home and talked to his girlfriend?
No, because he's due to come next week.
Oh, okay.
He sees me every other week because of money problems.
Yeah, I didn't know how long ago this had happened. Okay, because that's going to be an important part, because it's a great story, but people are going to want to know what happened.
Right, right. I want to know, too.
Of course, we all do.
Yeah, yeah.
Very good. Who else has a story? Go ahead.
I have something I'd like to share. Mm-hmm. I'm working with a 19, almost 20-year-old young man who is homosexual and has suffered a lot of abuse, both physically and emotionally, through his life. He was thrown out of his home, and is now living residentially with young people who are also struggling with their sexual identity. He started to see me. I've seen him about three times. Very big young man. He's tall and he's big and he's not childlike in any way. He's really an adult. And I started to work with him somatically first, so he would gently experience what it was like to be on the table. And he clearly had never really gotten out of his head before. He began to breathe differently and experience himself almost like a vessel, the whole vessel. And in the last session that I had with him, where I really began to use this somatically, my hands on him and move him through, he saw himself as he saw himself as 6 years old, and he started to laugh. And I said, "What's going on? Can you tell me where you are?" And he said, "I see myself at six." And he described what he looked like and what he was wearing and who was around him. And I asked him, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm singing." And I said, "You're singing? What are you singing?" He said, "I always sang. My family always liked me singing. They always encouraged me to sing." And this was a very different experience than he had described to me in lieu of all the abuse and the abandonment that he experienced. And I said, "Well, what were you singing?" And he said, "Gospel. I learned how to sing gospel." And I said, "Can you sing for me?" And on the table, this young man, who probably hasn't done it in many years, began to sing for me what he saw himself and heard himself singing as a young child. And, he wept. He started to, feel himself at a time when he was validated and when he was seen for who he really was, beside all of the labels that were put on him. So it was a very moving session for me as well. It was kind of a breakthrough for him. When the session was over, he sat up, he composed himself, and he sat quietly, and he said, "I really want to do this work with you." And he made a commitment to continue, which was very touch and go for us. I wasn't really sure whether he was going to buy in. And so for me, that was the end result, and I'll be getting back to him as soon as I can when I get back up north.
Very nice. That's a great story. A couple of things I would do. I would make it a little bit shorter, and it's a little too clinical. So watch your buzzwords and just watch, because you're communicating to people who may or may not know what those mean.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously everybody in this call knows what you mean, but so you want to do that. Also, what's interesting to people is not whether you did somatic touch or touched him with an ice pick. It's more that your process and working with him got the result. So just be careful. Otherwise, because what you don't want to also do is have people say, "Well, what's somatic touch?"
Yeah.
That becomes a complicated discussion, and it derails getting into them discovering where you might be valuable for them. So anytime you have conversations where people start getting into the process and the details of what you do, it can be a derailer for a more productive conversation, because then you start getting into an argument of whether they think touch is a good idea or a bad idea, or somatic touch is better than ice pick touch or whatever thing would be. So that's just try and simplify your story a little bit. It's a beautiful story, and it's a terrific demonstration of what RSM is all about. Just keep making it as accessible as you can.
Thank you. That's really helpful. Appreciate that.
Sure. And unfortunately, we are out of time. We're going to do more stories next time. This is a very, very powerful thing. Your homework for this coming week is to refine your story based on the tips and techniques we talked about here, what you learned, and to try that story out on five different people, at least, minimum of five different people who are not synergists. So make sure you tell that story in five different settings, and notice the reaction, notice where it goes, notice what kind of questions people ask, notice what kind of interest it generates. And if it doesn't generate much interest or conversation, look and see with your partner, do you need to tighten the story up? Do you need to make it more dramatic? Do you need to tell it differently? Or do you need to get a different story? So the game plan is by our next call to have a story that you can use for the rest of your career, like Jones, air traffic controller to RSM person. You know, one that you know is just going to grab people by the collar and have them pay attention. So that's what your job is over the next month, is to really beta test and refine and recraft and check and test and use your partner to come up with a killer story. Any questions about that?
I have a question. It's not necessarily a story about a session, because Joan's story wasn't about a session.
No, it's a story that will get people engaged in talking with you. Very good. Any other questions? Well, we've come to the end of another hour. The time has flown by. These things then go faster and faster. If any of you came in late and you've met my big challenge and you haven't emailed me, please do that. I've heard from a couple of you, and I want to hear from more of you. And I look forward to our next session, which I believe is our last session. So make sure you have cake and champagne ready to celebrate your brilliant skills in improving as a practice builder.
What's the date?
Does the challenge still stand?
The challenge still stands, and the date will get emailed to you. I have no idea what it is. Very good. Have a great month, everybody. Practice build, practice build. Let's make RSM viable in the world together. You're doing great. I appreciate all the participation. Can't wait to talk to you in a month.
Thank you.